Into the Weird, episode 28. Death Becomes Him.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is my co-host, Herman Lowe. How are you, Herman?
Hey, Billy man. We're back for another Into the Weird, yet again after delivering an odd show. You know, the previous show was a little bit odd. You know, we focused on Vision and Scarlet Witch, and then before that we did a Doctor Strange storyline from the... I would say the Copper Age, right? Which is something we're not known for. But now we're right back with our regular Doctor Strange coverage. The one that we... Well, the reason we got into this podcast in the first place, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
So not that I didn't enjoy the Scarlet Witch and Vision episode. I loved every single bit of it. But, you know, if you think about it, they're weird for comics, but they're not really Into the Weird kind of weird characters, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, they're not that crazy.
I mean, they're regular Avengers, I would say, run-of-the-mill kind of stuff, you know. So, of course, we'll be carrying regular... we'll be covering the, you know, regular Avengers if the story's wacky enough. And there are some pretty crazy stories. I'm thinking Kirby, Captain America in the 70s, Mad Bomb. But, so we'll get to that, listeners. But, you know, normally we won't cover something like that. We were just riffing on the fame of WandaVision a little bit, you know.
Only we have no...
Yeah, we have no shame at all. No. And we're shameless.
Yep.
And we have no shame at not having any shame, you know. That's even more important. So, Billy, tell the listeners, what if we got on the docket today, Doctor Strange-wise?
Okay, so today we're going to tackle Doctor Strange 3 and 4, you know, and this is not quite a double dip. You know, we had to... We didn't have to, but we decided to do 3 and 4 together just because, you know, in typical Engelhardt and Brunner fashion, they do another reprint here because they were running a bit behind on their story. And I think, you know, we can probably throw Frank Brunner under the bus for that because I don't think Engelhardt was ever late with stories, really.
No.
You know, not that he was, maybe once or twice in his career, but most of the time it seemed like he was on point with the stories, but it was usually Frank getting a little behind on the artwork because his artwork is so awesome. So we get, you know, issue 3 with a two little Strange Tales reprints and then a full page splash that we'll talk about in the beginning and then half a page at the end, and then we'll get into issue 4, which is we're loving it. It's more the Doc and out there, out in the cosmos kind of action, and you know, our buddy the Silver Dagger torturing Clea. So we can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah, so basically the next Doctor Strange episode we do after this one, right, Billy, would be the final, it would sort of wrap up the Silver Dagger storyline, but we're building up towards that slowly, listener. So technically we could have done that today, right, Billy, but that would have been a little bit too much. We're going to want to go slowly, just like Brunner did when he did the art. We're going to go at a snail's pace to preserve the excellence that we want to, you know, riff on a bit here, because I don't want to go too fast through this gem of a storyline. So
no way. Yeah, because that's going to be it for the creative tandem.
Yeah, too. I almost don't want to say goodbye to them. Are you the same, Billy? Is that the reason why we're procrastinating, why we're stepping on the brakes here? I don't know. I think, you know, it is, because I don't want to say goodbye to... I mean, basically, I'm not... This is not hyperbole. This is my favorite... other than, you know, Alan Moore and Steve Bissett and John Totleben, this is probably my favorite comic book team. Even, well, I mean, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee were great, but for me it's basically, you know, 70% Kirby. But okay, we're not going to get into that. But Brunner and Englehart, man, they're like Gene Colan and Englehart that became later, and they're like, you know, obviously Gene Colan and Marv Wolfman on Tomb of Dracula. Mm-hmm. They're that. Yeah. That's how high they are in my, you know, level of esteem here. So, damn, I don't want to say goodbye to them. That's the point I'm trying to make. Yeah, man. But two great issues. I mean, one featuring, like you said, number three featuring a reprint of Strange Tales 126 from way back in the 60s, right, Billy? And, of course, that was done by Ditko and Stan Lee. But, you know, it's not, it doesn't detract from the story. It kind of makes sense the way they inserted that storyline into number three. But we'll get to that. So, Billy, you've got a bit of a synopsis. I'll run down the list of specs here, if you don't mind. And then we're going to listen to you. The title that we're first talking about is Doctor Strange, Volume 2, Number 3. Cover art by Frank Brunner. It was on sale on June the 11th. 1974, and then I think that's when my mom and dad got married. I mean, they got married in June of 1974. Interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, damn, I'm a bad son. I don't remember the exact date now. Got to check my calendar. Sorry, mom and dad. Anyway, it didn't matter because I was born 1973. You know, it was like a must wedding. Nah, I'm kidding. I was born a year later. Anyway, I always tease them about that. So cover price, Billy, 25 cents. Damn. Page count 32, editor Roy Thomas. So you know you're in for some good times. And it's the main title is called Doctor Strange Amidst the Madness. That's the main story title. But of course, it features the reprinted Steve Ditko and Stan Lee story from way back when, Strange Tales number 126, which introduced the Dread Dormammu, the Dark Dimension, Clea, and the Mindless Ones, right, Billy?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to get in the flashback. So I'll hand it over to you, sir, for the synopsis.
Yeah, so in the reprint issue here, like we said, we'll talk a little bit when we talk about 4 with the bookend material a little bit here. But yeah, in this issue, I think it's 126, and I think they included 127 in this one too, didn't they, when they did this reprint here?
I think it might be a little bit of 127, yeah. You know, like...
Yeah, the, it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, you get to see the Doc and the Ancient One, and the Ancient One actually, you know, tells him about the Dread Dormammu and sends the Doc with a little magical spell towards that dimension. And did you notice on the very second page of this book, the creature that the Doc has to fight? Does that look familiar to you at all?
Let me quickly get to that, Billy. Sorry, let me
refresh your memory. Do you remember the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends TV show?
Yeah.
Okay, so in one of the episodes the only episode that Doctor Strange appeared in, do you remember that one where they're all at the castle, all the heroes, and I think it's the chameleon trying to take them all out?
I would be lying if I say I remember that. I watched it as a kid, but I can't remember that episode.
You need to look that one up online somewhere and check it out, because the Doc is one of the heroes on that island, and he ends up having to fight a monster, which is not really a monster, it's a robot on the television show, but here it's like a legit giant monster, and this is the exact model that they used for that TV show.
Are you talking about that red Cyclops with the horns on the side of his temples, that one with the four arms?
Yep.
Six arms, actually. He's got six arms and no legs.
Yep.
That's awesome. What a great bit of trivia there, because I didn't know that. So they paid homage to Ditko and Doctor Strange on the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends TV show by referencing this, right? This visual. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't know that, Billy, man. That's awesome. Thanks for letting me know. Yeah, you know, I've got that TV show. I got to watch it again. I haven't gotten to it. I've got so many old cartoons I want to, you know, watch it.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
Again.
I don't think they've ever put that one out legally on DVD either. I think that's one of them that's still kind of in limbo with all the different rights issues and stuff like that. But yeah, if they ever do, I'll buy that in about 2 seconds flat, because that was my favorite when I was like 6 or 7 years old. But yeah, the doc, and he has to fight that guy, and then he has to fight all these other minions of Dormammu, one of which he calls, what does he say? Dormammu creates this like creature, and it's like, you know, like a little person, and the doc calls him a midget, and then it says, he goes Damn. Crazy. He goes, a midget. He appears to be devoid of power, and yet I must be on my guard. And he like attacks this little guy, but then it's almost like one of Kang's, what does he call that thing, Kang? Not a stimuloid, but the thing that Thor tries to beat up on, and it just keeps growing and gets bigger and bigger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a Kang.
The Growing Man or something like
that. The Growing Man. It wasn't an Avengers issue, right? Where in the hospital. They were in the hospital when they were attacked by that thing, I remember. Yeah, it's called the Growing Man, I think. So
it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and then, you know, we get introduced to Clea, and she's watching, and she's hilarious. She's thinking to herself, why does he press on? Surely by now he can see how hopeless it is. Back. Go back, noble human.
Oh, yeah. You know, when Grant and I did these issues quickly, we recapped it in the Silver Age. This part was one of our favorites because Clea just... She is definitely not human in her reactions, or maybe human according to how Stan thought, you know, girls should behave. I don't know, but normal women will not behave like this at all.
And they drew, and Ditko drew her kind of a little bit more sinister looking with these arched eyebrows.
Yeah.
She almost looks like, you know, like she's evil, but she's not. But, you know, then the doc has to confront Dormammu himself eventually, but then the mindless ones start, they're insane. Not only are they like trying to attack and get their way into Dormammu's like throne room and area and stuff like that, they're beating the crap out of each other, and one guy looks like he's zapping the other guy right in the balls with that like unibeam he has.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Right in the crotch, and then here come two more running around. But yeah, it's just like bonkers crazy Ditko and Lee to kind of just, you know, give you a little bit of a time where Doctor Strange thought he was gonna die and have to deal with death. That's the whole point of that.
Yeah, I mean, basically he was on the ropes. Clea helped him out a little bit with some advice, but basically it entails how he defeated Dormammu the first time, right, Billy, which was on a technicality because Dormammu is more powerful than Steven. It's a fact. He's godlike, you know, god level. He can take on eternity, which he's done before. And, you know, then Steven ended up helping Dormammu to hold back the Mindless Ones because Clea made the doc aware of the fact that it's only Dormammu's power embodied in this mystical force shield that he constantly has to maintain around the civilized portions of the Dark Dimension, which holds the Mindless Ones at bay. So Clea told Doctor Strange, if you defeat Dormammu, this shield will disappear. And the Mindless Ones will basically kill everybody. So you can't defeat him. And then the doc, obviously being smart about it, is he prolonged the battle until Dormammu had to expend so much energy to try to defeat Doctor Strange that he had to, you know, neglect maintaining the Force Shield. And so the Mindless Ones attacked. They they penetrated the barrier. And then Dormammu quickly had to reestablish it, right, Billy? But he couldn't do it because it was too late. The Mindless Ones were already, you know, within his, you know, perimeter. So he didn't have time because it took time to establish this barrier the first time. Now that it's been breached, you can't just throw it back up again, lickety-split. So basically, Steven ended up lending the power of the Amulet of Agamotto. We'll get more into that later, right? To Dormammu by boosting Dormammu's power with the Amulet of Agamotto, and that allowed Dormammu to save this, you know, his kingdom. Yeah. So because of that, Dormammu felt he was in Stephen's debt. You know, he's evil, but he has his own sense of, he has a code of honor.
So, at least for now.
Stephen said, oh, our debt will be paid if you promise two things. You promise me you'll never harm Clea, and you promise never to invade the Earth. Kind of what he did when he forced that promise out of Dormammu in the MCU movie of Doctor Strange, right? But he did it with, you know, the Time Stone. Or the time gem, you know, they call it the time stone, whatever. But, you know, that was interesting, you know. But, you know, I prefer the old comics where Steven sort of, you know, did him a favor and Dormammu felt that, you know, this favor now has to be repaid. He can't kill Steven. But some great Ditko art along the way, right, Billy? You've got these swirly effects. Mm-hmm. You've got these weird portals. You've got basically no... There's no foundation. There's no ground level. You know, everybody's just floating among these squiggly lines.
Right. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's cool. And you, before Steven confronts Dormammu, Dormammu sort of softens him up by sending these other mystical practitioners from the dark dimension against Steve, and Steven beats them one by one. And then you've got the budding romance between Clea and Doctor Strange. And Billy, there's some pretty damn fine panels where, you know, that have become iconic. The panel where Clea is like on her knees and she's, you know, chained by these massive globe-like manacles to whatever passes for the ground here, which is just some blue sky. You know, we don't know what it is. But, you know, and then, you know, the mindless ones are right behind her. And she says, oh, it's the mindless ones. They've broken through. Now, I use that panel many a time on Twitter to whenever some stupid politicians make some ridiculous, you know, decisions, I always use that one to comment on events in the real world. The mindless ones, they've broken through. Now nothing matters. We're all doomed.
In any event, I am doomed.
Yeah, in any event. She likes to say that I'm doomed.
If Clea could only see into the future to, you know, 2021.
Oh, damn. Yeah, she probably can. That's why Ditko probably could.
Well, I'll tell you what. I do love how Ditko draws the mindless ones. There's not, you know, they're not, you know, there's not a lot of detail in them or anything like that, but it's very effective. Like, he almost draws them like a, like a big gorilla, just like a cyclops, yeah. But yeah. It just, there's like hordes and hordes of them and shooting these optic beams. It's really cool. He does a really good job with that. And then, of course, he does good on the close-ups. I really like the close-ups he does. Like, yeah. When it's more of the faraway shots, I'm kind of like, eh. But his close-ups, like that very page we were just talking about where Clea's chained up and she's like, ah, screw it, I'm going to die. Like, there's, you know, three panels in the middle of the page and two of them are the doc, you know, waving his hands around and saying what he's going to do, and then one of Clea. They're really, really good. And then the ancient one on the previous page, really, really good close-ups.
Yeah. No, that's true. There's this one panel, Billy, where the first time I think Clea introduces Doctor Strange to the mindless ones, there's this panel where two mindless ones are fighting each other and they're standing on this swamp-like mossy kind of... tentacle? I don't know what you would call that, but they're, you know, encircled by these swirling green mists. And then it seems that more mindless ones are pouring out of every orifice in this dimension, coming at them. But it looks like they're also cheering them on.
Like, yeah, the one in the background's got his hands up like he's celebrating. But yeah, that's the panel I was talking about where he zaps him in the nuts. It almost is like...
Yeah, that's the one you're saying. So we know which one won. Obviously the one who was more, you know... well, he was more creative than the other one because he zapped him in the nuts. He must have been the victor. Yeah. And then you've got a great panel of this mindless one just picking, presumably the one who zapped the other one in the nuts. He's picking up this unconscious minded one and hurling him into the void. And then, you know, oh man, it's just some great iconic, you know, Ditko panels here. And, you know, Billy, here's a little bit of information for you listeners as well. Many of you might know about it. Actually, I should thank Ryan Daly for making me aware of this. This is the classic Dormammu, you know, the first appearance of Dormammu, obviously. So this is his classic look. He's got this red bodysuit with this massive yellow belt, and then he's got these flowing kind of neck, you know, decorations, which isn't really like a cape at all. It's more like these, it's kind of like a cape, right, Billy? But it's more like a sort of like a cowl or a type of hood. It looks like he's wearing a hoodie, but it's got these weird ass, you know, sharp tinges coming out of it. And this Dormammu, and of course then he's got the fiery head, which is reminiscent of the Human Torch, but, you know, amped up. This classic Dormammu is going to be available as an action figure in August. Going to release it in conjunction with the Red Skull and a couple of other characters. And it's kind of like that Build-A-Figure, Marvel Build-A-Figure set, where you buy like six Marvel figures with each has a body part of something. And get this, when you buy all six of these figures, I don't know who the other four are, but I know Red Skull, classic Red Skull with the green, you know, suit. The green jumpsuit suit and the brown boots. If you buy all the figures in this set, it would the character you would be able to assemble would be Zemnu.
Oh, wow, the
Yeti. The Yeti, dude, yeah. Oh, man, I'm seriously
thinking.
I might not get them. Me too. I mean, they're ridiculously expensive, but I'm thinking, damn, if we pass up this chance, Billy, man. I mean, think about it. We get, you know, Dormammu, classic Dormammu, and to the best of my knowledge, he's never been done as an action figure. So,
yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not super into them, so they could have had something out, and I just missed it. But usually if it's something Doctor Strange related, we'll ask Peter from the Sanctum.
Oh, yeah.
He'll know. Yeah,
we'll get to go. I mean, you could go on Amazon and check it out. They're up for pre-order. I already pre-ordered the Doc and the Red Skull, but there isn't like one, you know, a whole set for all six of the figures that you can pre-order yet. That's why I sort of, I already pre-ordered those two. But, you know, I like displaying them on my shelf if it's, you know, Morbius or if it's, you know, Doctor Strange related. I've also got a couple of other stuff. But, you know, I don't normally go into collecting that things. But, you know, Dormammu, the classic look, I really like it. Even though I also like the way, you know, Gene Colan drew him later, you know, and that became the more established Dormammu version. But so just a little bit of an aside there for the listeners. Now, Billy, one thing we should mention before we forget. Why is this Doctor Strange issue, this Strange Tales number 126 and a little bit of 127, why is it so important in the Doctor Strange mythology as a whole? Because at the end, when Doctor Strange has triumphed over Dormammu, something not even the Ancient One had done before, he's gifted with two items that replaces two of his established, you know, mystical items up to this point. And Billy, what are they? What are these two next level kind of items that upgrades him even further?
Well, the Ancient One, he just calls it a new cape and a more wondrous amulet. But of course, you know, we know them to be the Cloak of Levitation and the Eye of Agamotto.
Yeah, it's up to this point in time, it seems Stephen had been wearing the lesser Cloak of Levitation, or it might not even have been. I mean, later on in Doctor Strange's mythology, it was established that it was the lesser Cloak of Levitation, but at this point in time, it's just a cloak, right? You know, later on, he will, I think, gift it to the character we discussed on our previous crossover episode, Rintra. You remember that Minotaur guy? Stephen King will gift him with this cloak, this blue cloak, which is the lesser Cloak of Levitation. But yeah, now this is the first issue ever that Doctor Strange is going to be wearing the actual Cloak of Levitation, right, Billy? And he's got his most powerful talisman, the Orb of Agamotto, because previously he had only been using the Amulet of Agamotto, which is sort of like a talisman that the Ancient One created that channels the power of the Orb of Agamotto wherever the orb may be. But now Stephen is gifted with, he can be trusted with the actual orb, the eye of Agamotto. The orb we'll talk about later. The orb he's there. But yeah,
the next.
Yeah, sorry. So just to correct my error there, listeners, the Amulet of Agamotto has now been replaced with the Eye of Agamotto, just like you said, Billy. And that eye has always freaked me out. You know how I feel about that little eye.
I actually, yesterday, a little insight to my doings at the homestead here. I actually had on my one pair of Doctor Strange socks yesterday, and they have a big, giant Eye of Agamotto on them. So.
Oh man, I mean, I love the eye, but I'm not gonna be looking at those socks if you ever post pictures of them, Billy, or if I ever visit you guys and I see you sporting those socks around the place. I'm gonna be, my eyes are gonna be firmly up to your, you know, eye level. I'm not gonna be glancing down. Those eye, it freaks me out, man. Especially when that eye like pops out of the talisman and attaches itself to Steven's forehead. Damn.
All right. So hey, all right. Now let's get to the new material in this book. Let's get down to the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
That is, I was talking to you before we started recording about this splash page. Now, there's actually a text piece at the top, and I'm going to read that quick, and then why don't you go into detail about the artwork, you know, who is responsible for it, and then what you think of it. I want to hear your thoughts on that, because I already told you how much I love it. So here, I'll read this quick text piece, which, you know, Engelhart would do this every now and again. He'd throw a little text piece here on the front, and some of them are just super awesome, and this one is really cool. So let me get on my my narrator voice, my Morgan Freeman voice. Once he was a man like most others, a worldly man, seduced and jaded by material things. But then he discovered the separate reality where sorcery and men's souls shape the forces that shape our lives. In that instant, he was born again to become a man like no other, a man who left us behind and strove to stand against the unseen subtle perils hovering thick and black around our fragile existence. And so began the mystic majesty of Doctor Strange. Dun, dun, dun.
Wow.
So, there you go.
Isn't that the best ever Marvel origin opening, you know, caption ever? You know, Marvel always put these origin captions, or sometimes they're manifestos, right? I believe they're not even origin captions. They're like a manifesto. Or sometimes they're both. You know, like, my favorite is always Shang-Chi's. You know, that's my favorite, the origin caption. But this one, damn, why didn't they keep this one? They should have kept it for longer than they did. Because this is the best, right, Billy? Well written by Engelhart there. And very poetic. And he even makes mention to, you know, Doctor Strange being a man like no other, which is something Clea frequently calls the Doc. Oh, he's such a man. A man like no other.
Yep.
And no, it's a great origin caption there. So well done. Mm-hmm. But, you know, before we get to this opening splash page, which is jaw-droppingly wonderful, incredible in its detail and in its layout and effects by Brunner, let's talk about the cover, Billy. One of the best covers featuring Dormammu, I think, ever. Because, Billy, I don't know what you think about this cover by Brunner. He did, presumably, the inking and the coloring as well, but it's got Steven facing off against Dormammu, and you don't often see Brunner drawing Dormammu.
No.
Because, you know, Dormammu was sort of vanquished by the time he got on the book, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we saw him drawing guys like Nightmare. Obviously, Shuma-Gorath is his, you know, it's his best, I think, villain that he ever drew for Doctor Strange. But I love his Dormammu. You know, this, you've got Dormammu's head exploding like a nuclear bomb on this cover, right, Billy? And these magical lightning bolts coming out of it. And he looks angry, man. Dormammu looks angry. Now, the thing that I like about Dormammu is he looks a lot like the Human Torch, you know, his face, but he doesn't have a nose. So that makes him inhuman enough to seem, you know, evil and sinister looking, otherworldly. And then you've got Doctor Strange facing off against Dormammu with Clea squatting at his, you know, on her knees at the Doc's feet. And you've got them on that same swampy tentacle that Ditko drew the Mindless Ones on, Billy. I mean, what a great Ditko homage there. And then you've got the swirly effects at the bottom right there from the Dark Dimension that Ditko pioneered. Man, I love the Kirby crackle. It's sort of like Kirby Crackle. Let's call it Brunner Crackle. This is his version of Kirby Crackle around the mystical effects emanating from this magical, you know, atomic bomb that is Dormammu's head. And then, you know, you've got Doc and Clea in shadow a little bit, right? Because obviously, you know, Dormammu's throwing off a lot of light with this firework effect coming out of his head. So, you know, the shadows are very deep and ominous looking where the Doc and Clea are standing there. And the Doc's brandishing his trademark mystical gesture with his fingers, which, You know, he does, like, his heavy metal sign there. Brandishing it. And then he's got one dialogue bubble which says, he's back! Back from the dead! So this has got nothing to do with the story inside. This is just to whet the reader's appetite a little bit, right, Billy?
Yeah, I can't imagine if you bought this, what you thought was going on, just simply because the story wasn't heading in this direction. So, you know, when you open it, though, and see that first page, you're like, yeah. And then you see it's a reprint, and I don't know how people felt about that back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it. I mean, obviously, this is something that foreshadows something that did not happen. But if Dormammu, I mean, at this point in time, yes, people do think he's dead. He's not, in fact, dead. He's going to return again. But Steven did vanquish him, you know, during, what was it, the Colin and Roy Thomas era, right, Billy, in a battle with Dormammu. But it wasn't Steven per se. It was more like he squared off against Eternity, and it was like this immovable object meeting this unstoppable force, right? That kind of thing, right? So they both destroyed, but not really both destroyed. They're just discorporated in this battle. Mm-hmm. And then this is a very interesting thing to say on the top here, because it implies that if Dormammu can come back from the dead, you know, Steven can. Sort of, you know, Billy, in a roundabout way, because we know that this Steven is dying. That's the storyline that we're dealing with at the moment. So because of that, this is a very apt cover, because Dormammu shows up in the comic in a reprint, but it's more about the concept of death and returning from death, you know. So I think, yes, it did tease us with something we never got. Readers might have been upset about it at the time, but since we're not those readers, we're fine with it. And, you know, we do get a lot of Dormammu action in this book, so it kind of makes the cover make a little bit more sense for me. But Billy, now let's talk about the thing that takes our breath away about this issue, is this opening splash by Brunner to introduce the flashback. Holy moly! Sorry, that's a Fawcett and DC reference, but by the orb of Agamotto.
I think maybe a couple months ago at this point when I was just kind of looking ahead, and yeah, wow, just blown away. And I remember a lot of people being like, yeah, wow, holy moly. And I was like, yep, it is crazy good. And like, you know, I said to you too about the inker, you know, Alan Weiss is credited. I'm not sure, you know, he was one of the crusty bunkers, so you never know. Sometimes they threw one name out there if that was the primary person. And then, you know, there were other people doing a little work here and there as well, but that's who got credit. And I mean, wow, is it just unreal. It's incredible.
Now, Billy, look at the rest of the art team on this. Okay, of course, you've got Steve Englehart doing the dialogue caption and, you know, the rest of the captions. Doc never really speaks in this flashback because in this opening introduction to the flashbacks that's coming, because he's riding on Aragorn. Well, the version of Aragorn in his mind that Valkyrie gifted him with in the last issue, you know, during that drunken tea party debacle. The queen of the drunken tea party. The queen of hearts, technically, if you want to go with the Alice in Wonderland metaphor. Right. So Valkyrie gifted him with Aragorn. Aragorn's taking him to where he needs to be, which is the center of the orb of Agamotto, in which he's trapped. And he's doing this all for Clea. That's why in the background, the space or the sky or the, you know, whatever world he's leaving behind has Clea's face imposed on it, you know, which is Doctor Strange thinking only about Clea, and he needs to escape the orb. He needs to escape death in order to rescue Clea from Silver Dagger. And what an amazing effect. I mean, the Doc's riding in some kind of a universe with these globular planets that are attached like atoms to each other. And some of them are exploding, right, Billy? Some of them are solid. And then Clea's in the background, her face drawn in this with this golden hue and this twinkling effect that I love from Brunner's inner hair, you know, shining and blinking. And then you've got Aragorn looking menacing. He looks like he's a war horse ready to take on, you know, Alexander's legions or something. Or he looks like, you know, a war horse from the steppes, you know, Attila the Hun's, you know, warrior horses here riding into battle here. And the Doc looks pretty good too. I mean, riding a horse. You don't often see that because when you got the Cloak of Levitation, you don't need to kind of, you know, be an equestrian. But, you know, the Doc, he needs to be on Aragorn because Aragorn's the only one who knows where to go.
Right.
And then you've got this great bottom panel of the Doc looking at this disc of light, which could also be a hole with this image of a skull juxtaposed on top of it, right? The image of death. And this is sort of a precursor to a memory that he's remembering, you know, that he's thinking about. Because they say that while he's riding through this cosmos, memory assaults him and his mind starts wandering away. And that's why this you know, story of Ditko is from way back in the 60s is so, you know, apropos, right, Billy? So appropriate for this, because this is the first time he met Clea.
Yep.
Right? And it's also the first time he had his, what is arguably his greatest victory. I mean, he's beaten Baron Mordo before this, you know, before this flashback, right, of course. But this is the first time he defeated a foe that's so far beyond him in power, and yet he still triumphed. So this is his greatest achievement from in his mind, probably, right, Billy? So that's why this flashback is very appropriate. Plus, you know, of course, the Clea stuff, his first time that he met her. So great insert here by Brunner and by Englehart. And, we should say the lettering was done by Tom Orzechowski, right? And then, Billy, do you see the colors were done by Jan Brunner?
His wife, yeah. I never even realized she had any kind of a credit in the comic book, so that was a little bit of a stunner.
Yeah, that was a surprise. What? Definitely a surprise. And, you know, Englehart, he wrote the captions beautifully. I mean, there's one where he says, one memory intrudes. Oh, no, first he says, when all of a sudden the memory of his beloved Clea blossoms boldly in his brain. And then they say, one memory intrudes, insists. And as a ghastly symbol of death appears within the hazy sky above, Doctor Strange finds his mind wandering away. And then we cue the flashback of Ditko and Stan Lee. So, I don't know, Billy, man. It's, you know, obviously, lots of people must have been upset at the time because this was a fill-in, you know, story. Brunner couldn't hack it in terms of deadlines. You know, so that's why he eventually left after another issue. But, damn, the things we got from Brunner and from Englehart as a team, it makes it more than worth it. I wish we had gotten more, but, you know, I'm happy with the way things worked out, because then we got Colin back, you know, got Englehart and Colin teaming up, and still Brunner was the best for me drawing Doctor Strange. And you know, what we got is what we got, but I'm very happy about that. We should be grateful just to live in a world with Frank Brunner art. We should go down on our knees and worship the guy like we do Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. This guy should be a deity of comic book art. So, you know, great, you know, opening segment there. And then the story we discussed is obviously him fighting and defeating Dormammu and meeting Clea. But then it ends on a bittersweet note as well, right, Billy? Because right after he's gifted the Eye of Agamotto and the Cloak of Levitation, the Ancient One finishes off the flashback sequence with saying that one day you will become the master. You know, one day I will be gone and you will be the master. And then we cue the Brunner and Englehart bits again, which is, I think, a sequence of five panels. And it's the Dog going through this portal to confront death itself, because after all, his confidence has been boosted by this flashback, because he realizes he is now the Sorcerer Supreme. And if anybody can defeat death, it is him. And because the Ancient One has defeated death, right, Billy, in the past. That's why he's immortal. So now the Doc is going to attempt it. This is just one more step in him becoming more of himself, which he is now already. He's the Sorcerer Supreme, but he still has to face a couple of trials before he can fully master, you know, his power and responsibility. So then it ends with a great little panel of Aragorn and Steven just diving through this portal, right, Billy, with these looks. What it looks like to me is like planets going supernova around him. You know, these globular molecular kind of planets that are attached to each other with these lines. They're just exploding all around him. And he screams, I shall confront the unconfrontable, death itself, and I shall triumph. Wow, mm-hmm. Billy, man. No, this is, even for a flashback issue, I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's great. I never tire of reading it.
It's a lot of fun, for sure.
Okay, Billy, now that brings us to the coup de grace. Well, not really, because we'll see that in the next issue, issue 5, but...
Just about.
I mean, issue number 4. I'm quickly going to get the specs of that, and I'll let you do the synopsis, and then we can talk about the amazing cover. Yet another amazing cover. Oof. Wow. Okay, so here we go. I mean, they were just... They could do no wrong at this point in time, right, Billy? They were steamrolling. Their momentum was carrying them so at such a breakneck pace, but it was like, I imagine this is what the Beatles were kind of like in like mid-1966, 1967. You know, they just, there's just hit after hit that just kept coming and coming. They just couldn't stop. You know, it's just kind of, okay, this is very, people might think, what, you're comparing Brunner and Engelhardt to John and Paul? Yes, I am. And I'm not ashamed of it. It's this good.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
And don't just take our word for it, right, listeners? Read these things if you haven't, and you'll see what we mean. This is just seminal comic book making here. So let's get to this, Billy. Doctor Strange, Volume 2, Number 4, cover dated October 1974, but published in July, or on sale on July the 9th, 1974. And again, the cover price is 25 cents, page count 32, edited by Roy Thomas, cover by Frank Brunner. And the writer, Steve Englehart, penciled by Frank Brunner, inked by Dick Giordano this time around, lettered by Tom Orzechowski, colorist Linda Lesman. And she did wonderfully on the colors.
Fantastic.
Of course, you know, listeners who are looking for these two issues can find them in the Doctor Strange Separate Reality paperback, also the Essentials Doctor Strange Volume 3 trade paperback, and then the Marvel Masterworks Volume 5. So, Billy, okay, I'm going to hand it over to you once again for the synopsis, Doctor Strange number 4.
All right. Doctor Strange soars through the air aboard Aragon and recounts the recent events inside the orb of Agamotto. As he nears a castle, three robed figures confront him. One introduces himself as Famine. The Horseman? Question mark?
Yeah.
And warns the doc that he has entered the domain of the dying. He makes his way into the local village and sees a man trying to commit suicide. Then a horde of undead try to bar his way and even kill him. He uses Aragon to soar above them and heads into the void. Almost immediately, Aragon turns to bones and Doctor Strange comes face to face with death. After a couple of futile attempts to kill death, it looks as though the doc is near defeat. Suddenly, eternity appears and provides sanctuary against death. In this realm, though, death holds sway and is closing in on the old doc. It seems all is lost, but then the doc reappears in what seems to be another realm and is joined by his master, the Ancient One. His visage tells the doc that he's passed the first trial, but put before him as Sorcerer Supreme, but that more are coming. And then next, showdown with Silver Dagger. All right, so what did you think about this?
Wow, I mean, by now we're sounding like broken records, right, Billy? Because how many more adjectives can we use to describe the sheer magnificence of this comic book? I mean, the art, okay, there's no character development except for Doctor Strange, you know, in overcoming death and whatnot. But in terms of, you know, there are no supporting characters there. There's nobody he can talk to other than these figments of his mind or imagination. Or they might actually be real spirits that are trapped here at the threshold of death, right, Billy? They want to die. They want to pass over. They want to leave whatever limbo this is that the orb encompasses. And they want to escape it. And so they've been, you know, these limbo-like figures from this town, this abandoned little town. They've started to conglomerate around this portal that leads to death, or the realm of death. And they're hoping that when Doctor Strange breaks through, because he's the only one with the power to do so, when he breaks through, they can sort of hang on his coattails and you know, go with him because they just wish to die. That's all they wish. I mean, you've even got one guy trying to, in this town as the Doc passes through. This one guy jumps from this overhang or this bridge above to kill himself, and he just ends up crushing every bone in his body, but he's still alive. He can't die.
Oh, awful.
And Billy, just look at that guy's face. Doesn't that remind you of 10 years later how John Turtleman and Stephen Bissett drew Anton Arcane's face? Or even the way Bernie Wrightson drew the faces of, you know, Arcane's unmen. You know, it looks like some of their faces, but it's more like Turtleman and Bissett, because we know that they were inspired by Brunner. And, you know, this them doing, well, when they did Swamp Thing, that was them, you know, doing a lot of these horror characters that Brunner drew in a superhero book. But at this point in time, it's not really a superhero book, right, Billy? It's straightforward fantasy and horror. You know, it's got a lot of horror in there.
Oh, yeah. So
I love the fact that, you know, Stephen has to go through this trial, which is to become, to come into his full power as the Sorcerer Supreme, which the Ancient One also did 600 years ago. He has to defeat death. And in order to do that, he has to accept death as a reality and accept the fact that he is dying, but he has to become one with eternity in order to do so. So Billy, at this point when he dies, he also becomes one with eternity. So he sort of assumes the mantle of eternity briefly in order to not combat death, but absorb death into himself, and thereby making himself deathless, or I should say ageless, probably, right? Ageless. So this is what the Ancient One did ages ago. He was at death's door too, and he absorbed death into himself as a reality and as a power, and thus became ageless. That's why, that's the secret of the Ancient One's immortality. Now, Doctor Strange can still die by violence, but at the end of this issue, we learn that he has literally become the Ancient One, or what would one day be the Ancient One again, because now Doctor Strange is immortal, right, Billy? He, the sign of the Ankh, the Egyptian symbol of death, but here it's the symbol of life, appears on his head. And this is not the first time. I mean, you might remember, like, later on in the Doctor Strange comic, he is aged, artificially aged, but then the Ankh appears and ages him back to his regular age. You know, so he cannot be killed by, you know, spells that age him any longer. He's ageless and immortal unless he dies by violent physical means. But time cannot touch him. Death cannot touch him in terms of, you know, time and, you know, the normal diseases, you know, things that affect mortals cannot touch him. Only some extreme form of mystical violence can now kill him.
Yep.
So again, Doctor Strange has upped his power levels, right, Billy? But at this point in time, it's like a video game character, what do you call it, an RPG character that you're putting through his paces and just upgrading him. And Engelhardt and Brenner have upgraded Doctor Strange yet again, much like Stan Lee and Ditko did in the flashback in the previous issue where they, you know, upgraded his equipment. This time around, the Doc has upgraded his mystical might to sort of overcome death and age.
Yeah.
So, Billy, what about you? What did you think? I mean, I love this issue unequivocally. That's all I can say. It's just art. It's beautiful art, beautiful writing. And not a lot of dialogue between characters, actually, if you think about it. I mean, you've got the Four Horsemen showing up. Well, one of the Four Horsemen, Famine. And, you know, I was immediately thinking Apocalypse, but this was way before the X-Men and X-Factor had established Apocalypse and his Four Horsemen. So this was just the trope of the Four Horsemen from the Bible and, you know, from mythology. So,
what did
you think?
Another incredible splash page when you first turn in, where boundaries decay. And I mean, this skull, death in the background, you know, the Doc. I mean, it's just like a swirling effect around the skull and then some cross-hatching and stuff like that. It's just, you know, the Doc on Aragorn there. And, oh, man, it's a beautiful splash page. And then we get the panel of the Doc talking to his buddy, the Caterpillar, which was great when he's recounting what's happened in the recent last day or two here, and then, man, yeah, two other huge, like, one splash page. It's broken up into almost like four panels, I guess you would call them, but the one where he's falling, and, oh, it's just incredible, incredible stuff. Two other pages back to back with, like, oh my gosh, Brunner's artwork in this are just, You won't believe it when you see it. Some guy sat down with a pencil and drew this kind of stuff. It's crazy good.
It's like every panel, even the smallest of panel is like a commission that he's done for someone, and he's not skimping, right, Billy? This is him putting as much time and effort and detail into it as is humanly possible. And it works. And, you know, Billy, let's talk about that a little bit, because the cover itself is a work of it's like a masterpiece of art here. It's the doc falling backwards through space into the maw of a giant skull, which is death, obviously. And then in the eye sockets of the skull, there's universes being born and being destroyed. And the doc is, tumbling into this, past these jaws, past these teeth. And very horror-esque. And then you've got great colors. You've got this dark purple background filled with stars and planets. And
so good.
Doctor Strange meets death on the cover. And then you've got Brunner's signature down there, which he always did in such a great way. It reminds me of Hyborian Age kind of stuff, right? The way he put it on that little banner.
Great signature.
Yeah, great signature. And then, you've got the docs, corner caption, him in the circle with his eye twinkling with magical light. Corner box art there. And then, you open up with yet another amazing splash page where, death is confronting Doctor Strange riding on Aragorn, and then the title of the story, Where Boundaries Decay. And that's an apt title, because think about it, Billy, like death is associated with decay. And death is also the boundary between life and what comes after, if anything.
Yeah.
And this is Doctor Strange transcending the barrier of that separates life from death by he actually exits the Orb of Agamotto, even though he doesn't realize it at the time. He is within the void, which is space, but it's a space controlled by death, because death, in fact, has complete control of this area called the void. He attacks Doctor Strange. Now Doctor Strange is not even within the confines of the orb anymore, where he was relatively safe, because remember, Billy, he was pulled into the orb through a necromancy spell in order to save his life. So the orb at this point in time, it was sort of preserving his life but also sucking it from him the longer he remained in the orb. But he was still safe from immediate death, which is what Silver Dagger sort of caused when he impaled Stephen. So, now that he's left the orb, he has no more protection. He has nothing to draw power from other than himself. And now he's facing death. And death keeps throwing these meteorites at him. The first meteorite, or these asteroids, it strikes Aragorn's hoof. And Aragorn is immediately transformed into the skeletal flying steed that falls apart. And then the doc, at first he tries to escape death. This is when he realizes how to combat death, the strategy he has to use, right? He tries to fly away from these death meteorites that decay, whatever it touches. And then all this time he's engaging in this verbal sparring with death as well, right, Billy?
With death, yeah.
So I was wrong earlier when I say there's not a lot of dialogue. There's a hell of a lot of dialogue. There's just not a lot of character development, because this is not really developing the character of death. I mean, if this is death that Thanos fell in love with, I can see that she's a bitch. If I can put it like that, right, Billy? Death's a bitch, it's true. But, there's this great scene where Stephen sort of flies through the jaws of death, right, Billy? And then the stars are twinkling behind her, very reminiscent of the death that Thanos fell in love with during the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. But that death was silent, completely silent. This death is very verbose, right? She's garrulous. Oh, man, she's got some great insults that she levies Steven's way. And then, as he's trying to escape her by flying away from her attacks, he sees the outline of eternity, right, Billy? The shape of eternity, the persona, the personification of eternity.
Yeah.
And he says, by the 12 moons of Moonapur, it's a hole in space. And its shape is that of eternity. And then he, you know, realizes that in order to combat death, he has to embrace eternity. But death tries to first dissuade him by showing him Clea dying, right? Billy saying that right at this moment, she's being psychologically and physically tortured by Silver Dagger. Now, what is, I mean, we know Silver Dagger's torturing her yeah. psychologically, but what does she mean by physically? I mean, that's disturbing, right? Is it just that she's chained up and, you know, not given food and water, or I don't know. I hope it doesn't mean anything else. Yeah. Because there's always that dimension.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, and then death here too. So death is trying to stop the doc from getting to eternity, and he's just about there, and death says, so you wish to preserve or persevere, eh? You believe yourself safe as you were with your parents, your friends, as you were with your woman. It shows this visage of Clea, and the doc's like, Clea. And he says, the caption box says, she is dying, spirit, under the psychological and physical torture of Silver Dagger, if you do not return to my realm. And then the doc's face is like aghast, because then she turns into a skull, like she just died. And he's like, what? And he's like flipping out.
Exactly, man. This is kind of like, I don't know, Billy, if you've ever watched the series Rick and Morty.
No.
Okay, dude, I think you'll like it, though. It's great. There's this one episode where, you know, Rick and Morty and Morty's sister Summer, they're in Rick's space vehicle, which is this flying trash can, basically. But they're landing in another dimension, on another Earth, where, you know, there are these dangers, but the battery of the car has died. So Rick and Morty have to miniaturize themselves to go into the battery to repair the battery. And they have to leave the sister Summer in the car. Now, Summer says, I don't want to be left alone in this weird, you know, dark parking lot in this another universe full of dangers. And Rick says, you'll be okay. And he says, car, keep Summer safe. And then the car is, you know, an AI, and the car says, yes, Rick, I'll do that. So, at, you know, the police get involved. You know, they try to arrest Summer while she's in this car, and then Summer says, car, yeah, keep me safe, but don't kill any of the police officers. Come on, be humane. And then, do you know what the car does? It attacks the police officers psychologically. One of the cops, he lost his kid in a shooting incident. You know, probably the kid played with his dad's gun. And so the car clones the kid and gestates the kid and releases a tube with this newly cloned kid. And then the cop is like ecstatic. He's like, oh my God, you're alive. And then the kid decays in front of the cop and melts into this tub of goo. And then the car says, leave us alone. All of you have loved ones. All loved ones can be returned. All loved ones can be melted or something like that. And then the cops just back off. Nobody wants that psychological torture. This is what death's doing to Steven right here. Bringing Clea back and then decaying her in front of Clea's eyes. And Steven sort of succumbs to it briefly. But then, Billy, he falls back into the shape of eternity, right? And he briefly assumes eternity's power. He becomes one with eternity, kind of, if you think about it, right?
Oh, man, that splash page. Oof.
Oh, that's a brilliant splash page. Steven's like lying as if he's in suspended animation, and he's lying in the silhouette, the white silhouette of eternity, with the cosmos as the background, and a lot of Kirby Crackle around him, right? Brunner's version of Kirby Crackle, like I mentioned before. And then you've got Death being defeated, right, Billy? Death itself is now exploding with these molecules or planets. It could be molecules or planets. You never know what it is. Or these subatomic particles that Death was using to kill Steven with coming out. Because at one point in time, right, not just the meteorites and comets, Death also said that while you're dodging the meteorites and comets, I'm using the subatomic particles that are ever present in space to attack you on a microscopic level as well. So you're suffering from inner bleeding. Remember that part, Billy? Oh, yeah. Holy God. So, yeah, Death then is defeated with this explosion of particles coming out of the skull. And then Steven's just in a white void of nothingness. And then the Ancient One appears. And what happens then, Billy? This is the final page, by the way.
Yeah, so then that's when the Ancient One pops up and basically says, like, you know, because you overcame death and any fear of death, that, you know, you're basically dead being born again, which isn't that the second time already that's happened?
Yeah.
This to the doc?
Yeah. It's the second time, then, yeah. You
know, he's going to be able to basically live for hundreds of years now because he's not going to age at all. So that's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is him overcoming, like you say, a trial, that one of many, because the Ancient One hints that there's going to be more trials to come, which we'll see later on throughout the Volume 2, definitely. But this is the first of many. The first trial is, well, you could argue that in Marvel Premiere, the first trial was to become the Sorcerer Supreme by destroying the physical form of the old Sorcerer Supreme, right? I believe that's... could have been his first trial, but the Ancient One cites this one, this defeat of death, as the first real trial. And now Steven is almost the Ancient One. You know, he doesn't have the years behind him, but he has the experience and the magic behind him. And now, you know, his future is set. He cannot age, and he has the power of life over death, symbolized by the Ankh that now appears on his forehead as well. And we'll see this crop up in other storylines too, where Steven employs the power of the Ankh, you know, to reverse age, to reverse sickness and disease, all of that. So now he's more powerful than ever. And now he's finally ready to rescue Clea and defeat Silver Dagger. And that's how the issue ends, right, Billy? It ends with Engelhard writing, "You will one day become one with all." And then they say, "The voice of the Ancient One, his voice and face fades, and so does our story. Rejoin us in Doctor Strange number 5 for the grand finale, Showdown with Silver Dagger." Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to that. On one hand, on another hand, I'm not, because like we said, it's the end of their collaboration.
Yeah. But
on one hand, I'm looking forward to it, though, because number one, it's really good. And number two, I can't wait to hear you synopsize that because of the Silver Dagger's background. That's going to be kind of fun.
Yeah, that's my turn, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Because if some of the people don't know about that yet,
I know what you mean.
It's going to be fun to hear you
lampoon
some of that. So I can't wait.
Okay. I know what you're referring to. Yeah, that's going to be fun, man. I'm going to now you've upped the ante. I'm going to have to do a good one now. Pressure's on. Oh, damn. Yeah, but like you say, we're prolonging it, listener. So after what we've just discussed, now we'll have another, you know, fill in a show coming up about something else in the Bronze Age. And then, you know, two shows from now, we'll have the finale of our Brunner and Engelhard team up here. And also Steven confronting one of his greatest foes, I think, Silver Dagger, Billy. Because if you think about it, up to this point in time, he had been facing these god-level enemies, with the exception of people like Baron Mordo, you know, but Mordo's not, I don't know, he's one of Steven's mainstays, but he's not as sinister as Silver Dagger. Silver Dagger was the only one that came close to actually rendering Steven mortal. And
defeating him, yeah.
Yeah, because of that, I think Silver Dagger is one of his greatest enemies. I'd rank them, you know, if I may. My favorite is obviously Shuma-Gorath, but if I have to rank them, I would say Dormammu number 1, Nightmare number 2, then I'd say Shuma-Gorath number 3. This is just in terms of how important they are, not my favorites per se. Yeah.
First.
And then I'd say Silver Dagger number 4, Mordo number 5. You know what I mean, Billy? Mm-hmm. But that's just my personal ranking. Of course, my favorite will always be Shuma-Gorath. But that's just the way I think it is, or should be, the way it should be.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, cool. Dormammu is obviously, you know, he has to be number one in terms of how important he is to the mythology of Doctor Strange, you know. But that's why they chose him for the movie too, right, Billy? I mean, Mordo was in the movie, but not as a villain. He will become a villain later on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But so it made sense to put Mordo in the movie because he was Steven's first villain he ever fought as a magician. But he's not the greatest villain by far. Dormammu is, and Dormammu's the only one that's a credible threat on that kind of cosmic level that the MCU is going for. So I have to put Dormammu as number one in the comics as well. One of the most powerful antagonists in Marvel. So, Billy, great two issues. Even though there was a fill-in, you know, a reprint in issue 3, it still did not detract from my enjoyment of that issue. In fact, it sort of amplified it. And then we had this brilliant issue in number 4. And this makes me excited, but like you said, also trepidatious for our final, Steve Englehart and Frank Brunner collaboration, which is sad, but you know, it's going to be a good one, listener. So we hope you'll still be with us when we get to that. But right now, Billy, it's time for Mighty Marvel Missteps and Bronze Age Brilliance. So we're going to take a short break. When we're back, we'll talk that. So don't go away, listeners.
Look at that.
What is it?
All right, we're back with Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel Missteps. Billy, as ever, you can go first. What was your Bronze Age Brilliance for these two issues?
Okay, so for sure, I love the whole angle of the Doc overcoming, you know, death and his fear of death, and then that translating into him, you know, not aging and all that. I love that. You know, it was a great, like, you know, battle issue with the Doc battling, you know, his own thoughts. And then death itself, himself, whatever you want to call death, if you want to ascribe a gender to death. I mean, I think death is usually known as a woman, you know, when Thanos is having his fantasies. But and either way, I love that. That was, you know, even the part with Clea, you know, being in the background with Silver Dagger aside, this could almost be a standalone issue of the Doc just versus death. And that's super cool. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I like too. I like the fact that the Doc became more powerful, but it was against his will, right, Billy? It was for the love of Clea to escape death, to save her. He sort of sacrificed his humanity, if you think about it. Because after all, you might think living forever is a gift. It's not, you know. People like the Doc, I think they realize that. They realize that the endless responsibility of being the Sorcerer Supreme, you know, for hundreds of years on end, he's seen how that has affected the Ancient One. He knows that's not something to envy. So now he has that. Yeah. So he sort of sacrificed a large part of his humanity to save Clea. That's the part I like about it, that he attained this level, not out of selfish reasons, because he wanted to be more powerful, but because he had to in order to save Clea. And inadvertently, this led to him passing one of the most important trials that every Sorcerer Supreme has to pass, and that is, you know, to become immortal, to become ageless.
Yeah.
So I also agree with you. That's just another way of saying that part, that the Ankh now becoming part of Steven's repertoire of magical symbols. That's one of my favorite parts of this Doctor Strange, 5-issue storyline that we're getting here. So. Yeah. Great, concept introduced by Brunner and Englehart here. So, Billy, both of us agree on the Bronze Age Brilliance. And then, of course, the art. We must mention the art is again spectacular. But by now, readers have come to expect that the art cannot always be our Bronze Age Brilliance, because it is always brilliant if it's Brunner. I've never seen this guy skimp. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen him do covers that don't have, the impact based off of the way he, you know, the layout. But I've never seen a bad cover done by Brunner, if you know what I mean. I've only seen some that are less worthy than others just because of the layout issues, maybe. You know what I mean, right, Billy? But everything he does seems to be superlative. It seems to be next level. So I can never fault Brunner's art, but that would make it, you know, disingenuous if we always pick the art as a Bronze Age Brilliance. We can't, right? But Billy, what about your Mighty Marvel missteps?
Well, you know what? The only thing I can even slightly pick on is in issue 3 on that very awesome splash page that we talked about by Brunner and Alan Weiss. In the one caption box, it says, Doctor Strange rides the marbled corridors of unreality, astride a gray stallion on the gallop to death. And it's not gray, it's white. Aragorn is white, Aragorn is not gray.
Nitpicking.
There's nothing. I got nothing. That it's just like it's just crazy. Like even the, you know, like you said, you and Grant had talked before about some of the issues you can have with how Clea was treated and things like that in that reprint. But you know, other than that, you know, rehashing something that's already been talked about, it's just I can't find fault in these at all. They're just so good.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, of course, Ditko and especially Stan treated Clea, you know, like Stan treated Invisible Woman sometimes in the old 60s. But actually, Billy, Clea, I think Ditko had a hand in this a little bit. Clea was the voice of reason and the voice of intelligence in that flashback issue. You know what I mean? In that story from Strange Tales 126 and 127. She was the one who made the Doc aware of the stakes of defeating Dormammu. Without her advice, it would have been curtains for everybody in the Dark Dimension. So she's actually the VIP of that issue, if you think about it, the savior of the Dark Dimension, and rightfully so. She became the queen later on, well deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know, in a roundabout way, even though they depicted her without a lot of agency, she triumphed on her own without the help of Steven and Dormammu. You know, she relied on her own intelligence. And then only later, when she became the disciple of Doctor Strange, that's when things started to get weird for me. I didn't have too... I mean, Grant definitely had a lot of, you know, good arguments for why, you know, Stan shouldn't have treated Clea the way he did. I didn't really have a lot of them, maybe because I'm more... You know, I'm dead to the world a little bit, emotionally dead. But, you know, I do support, you know, the fact that female characters should be represented other than what they were in the 60s and 70s. But I think, you know, some of the guys that were more progressive in their thinking at the time, Englehart included, we know that, you know, guys like Gerber, they started to break the mold a bit when it came to female characters. Yeah. And even Stan, to an extent, I think he, at the end, he saw that, through the possibly because of fan mail that made him realize that he was doing something wrong, you know. So it might not have been Stan on his own, but he saw that, you know, times were changing, and he was always one to latch on to change if it was for the good of society. And that was definitely, you know, the representation of female characters, you know, with characters that were introduced in the 70s, sanctioned by Roy and Stan, like Red Sonja, you know, Hellcat, Tigra. You know, they had more freedom, they had more agency. You know, She-Hulk later on, which was one of the last characters Stan Lee created. So, you know, you could say that the guys redeemed themselves. So I'm saying that right. Even though this early in the 60s, there were already signs that they were starting to change a little bit. You know, and they introduced a character of Clea that was not always subservient. Yeah, but she would like lapse into a subservient role again, but then she would sometimes get out of it, you know. So it wasn't like consistent. So that's my point. I'm, you know, grateful to what Stan and Steve Ditko did for the Doctor Strange universe, obviously, and that they later on changed, you know, the missteps that they had, or they at least attempted to change it. Yeah. So, Billy, my misstep is a little bit more. We've discussed this, but I want to go into it a little bit. It's sort of like, you know, seeing the cover of number 3, seeing Dormammu of the cover. My misstep is the fact that we never got Brunner to do a full-on Dormammu story. I mean, this is the editorial guys' misstep here. This is Marvel's misstep in not looking at the time, Marvel in the 70s, not looking at this cover at the time and saying, damn, we should do whatever we can to keep Brunner on for a storyline with Dormammu, because just look at this cover. Look at how he drew Dormammu on this cover. Yeah. I mean, that's my biggest regret. It's not having Brunner do every single one of Doctor Strange's greatest foes. You know, he did a little bit of Nightmare. He didn't really do much of Mordo. A little bit. I mean, with the whole Cagliostro storyline, you know, there when Mordo was there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He did do, I'd say you can say he did more than enough of Mordo. Introduced a new classic villain, Dormammu. Shumagorath. But still, you know, I would have loved to see him tackle a whole Dormammu storyline.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to see some of that later with Engelhardt, though, you know, as the writer. But yeah, that's way down the line. So that's my misstep, the fact that we got this cover tantalizing us, but we never got a Dormammu storyline from Brunner. So, Billy, with that, we'll head straight into Shop Talk. I'm not going to put a break here, you know, because we just had one right before our missteps and brilliant segment. So we're just going to head right into Shop Talk. Billy, I'll let you go first. Do you have anything for Shop Talk that you want to bring to my attention and to the listeners' attention?
Well, I know we had talked about it beforehand. I haven't gotten to see it yet, but I am, you know, pondering getting Disney Plus for Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yes. Because
it looks super, super cool. And not that WandaVision didn't look cool, but it just, the trailers and things like that and clips I saw didn't do a lot for me. But Falcon and Winter Soldier looks really, really super cool. So I'm just like, oh, do I break down and get it or what?
Dude, I think you have to take that leap because it's worth it, man. It's definitely worth it. I mean, not just for Falcon and Winter Soldier and WandaVision, but for everything else too. It's definitely worth it. But if I were you, and I know what a big fan you are of the characters, I'd say you would love this show. So they're worth it, man. They're amazing. Action through the roof. Great. Action sequences, fantastic aerial sequences featuring Sam as the Falcon. And I mean, I couldn't see a difference between, let's say, the Marvel movie special effects and the TV show. There is no difference. The special effects are top notch.
Wow.
It's like watching a mini movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And same with WandaVision. Great special effects there. Amazing. But WandaVision was a more contained story. You know, here you have more of Sam and Bucky involved in world events. You know, they're globe-trotting a little bit, but they're also based in the States for some action. And there's some real shakeups in the Marvel Universe that affects not just them, but everybody. You know what I mean? So WandaVision did have that at the end, but not really. I mean, it was basically just contained in this little town and, you know, that Wanda was in, and S.H.I.E.L.D. sort of surrounding this little town. But here you see more like international spy action. You know what I mean, Billy? You've got them going to Germany a couple of times. You've got them going, doing some international black ops or what you would call black ops. And you've got like some home front action, terrorism. And they deal with all of this within just two episodes already. And it's action, like I say, action. Some great sequences there, I would say. Fantastic fight choreography of what we've come to expect from Cap, you know, your favorite Marvel MCU movie and mine, which is Captain America the Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. You know that fight choreography we got there between Cap and Bucky? You get it here too. You get it on that level here. So I know you love that, Billy. You know, we've got lots of friends, you know, on Twitter that are great friends of yours. Karen Walker. You know, we've Ryan from Fire and Warden Network. Everybody's singing this show's praises. Yeah. So you have to get it. Your family will love it. Well, I know your kids like to watch the MCU with you, so.
They love it. The other thing, too, is, you know, at some point, I know we're going to see Zemo again. And that's huge. I loved him.
Dude. No. Okay, I'm just going to shut up now. So this does not mean we're going to see him, okay? The fact that I'm shutting up right now. Make with that what you will. Damn, by the time the show's out, you know, the cat will probably be out of the bag. But, you know, Billy, I'm hoping by the time the show's out, which should drop at the end of the week, you'll already be able to see, you know, what's been happening on that show. Because, you know, we're recording the past, but people are listening to this in the future, which is there now. It's confusing.
Yeah, but oh yeah, dude, that was that was a great casting job for the film, you know what I mean? And then, you know, the way it looked like they were going to show him with, like, because that was one tiny little thing about I didn't like in the movie, is where he was just, you know, just a guy running around in, like, street clothes. He didn't have the crazy, you know,
mask. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and all that. And it looks like he's gonna in this. And it's like, oh, man, I gotta see this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love the way they did Zemo in the movie eventually, you know. But like you say, in the beginning, I was a little bit disappointed, if you know what I mean. But like you say, it worked out in the end. It's more, I mean, what's the actor's name? Daniel Brühl, right? Daniel Brühl. He's a German actor, I think. He's also in that movie... or in that TV show, The Alienist. You know, he's been in a couple of movies, you know, slowly working on his career. He's become an A-level star, I think, in terms of, you know, his acting capability alone.
Yeah, he's good.
He's a good Zemo. He's the Marvel Cinematic Zemo now, you know, so... And you'd think that a villain like the Red Skull would have been more prominent, but the Red Skull was there and he's dead and he's gone. You know, you know, he's not that prominent. Zemo is the better of the two, I'd say. The better of those two Captain America villains. And, you know, he's more sinister. He's more conniving. He has, you know, these plans. He uses his intelligence as a weapon. Of course, I regret that we won't see that mask. But, hey, maybe we will, Billy. Maybe we will. We'll see his classic look. I mean, that's what I love about the Captain America universe of the MCU. It's very utilitarian, you know. The outfits make sense, you know what I mean? Winter Soldier's outfit, Falcon's outfit, it's military grade tech, but it's not too flashy, you know what I mean? And when it was flashy in the first Captain America movie, that was because he was doing promoting the patriotic ideal. He wasn't actually fighting in that stupid suit, right? when he got to fighting the Germans, the Nazis, eventually in that first movie, the first Avenger, then it became more like a regular, believable super suit. You know what I mean? So, and, you know, there's nothing silly about Cap in the MCU, and that's what I love about it. Even when there's an A on his forehead in the first Avengers movie, I didn't mind it. It's just, it looked cool. I mean, that is explained by the fact that Coulson designed his suit, sort of, right? So Coulson wanted to. You know, and then later they take that away in Winter Soldier and in Civil War. So I love it. And this is great too, Billy. You'll love this, man. You really, I think this is more for you than it is for me, because you're more, well, you're an American. You love Captain America. I've gone on record in the past stating that I don't, as a rule, love patriotic superheroes simply because they're patriotic superheroes. You know what I mean? Because I'm not from the States. I do love Uncle Sam, strangely enough, you know, the freedom fighters. He's my favorite. Oh, if I could have a favorite patriotic superhero, he would be my favorite. I don't know why. There's no rational explanation why I love the guy. But you know, Cap, I love him, but he will never be my favorite. Simply because he's based in the sense of patriotism, which I don't have. I mean, it sort of like goes against the grain for me. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's hard to explain. I mean, the British have the same kind of stuff. They view patriotic heroes as suspicious. We're the same in South Africa, you know, a little bit. I'm different. I'm like that.
When I create my own comic book, the first character I'm going to create is going to be Captain S.A. So get ready.
At least it's not Captain S.A.S. I was thinking, oh my God, what are you doing there? That would be a great villain. But yeah, Captain S.A. It's actually R.S.A. Republic of South Africa. Captain R.S.A.
Captain Johannesburg.
Oh, no, dude. No, you don't know what's going on there now. You wouldn't say that if you knew what's really happening there. Captain Johannesburg. Holy moly. No, dude, that's cool. That's cool. You do you. I will read your comics anytime.
Sounds good.
So listen, that's a little bit of what we've got in store for Shop Talk. But I still want to mention, Billy, that's not the only thing I watched. I mean, I promised on a previous episode that I will get to watching Amazon Prime's new animated series, Invincible, based off of the comic book by Robert Kirkman and Ryan Ottley for Image Comics. And I did. And it is glorious. It is anything a superhero fan could ask for, and it's got some bloody horror in there too. Yeah. It's got action. There's evisceration. There's brain splatter. There's people getting super punched and disintegrating as their spines fly out of their backs at, you know, high velocity speeds. It's just, I mean, this is everything I've wanted from, you know, a marriage of gross body horror with superhero escapades. It's wonderful. So I would recommend that to the listeners, but also to you, Billy. You've got Amazon Prime. You've got no excuse. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you haven't seen the first three episodes already. It's great. You don't need to read the comic. I get that some people are laying off of the show waiting because they want to read the comic first. You don't need that. They're very true to the comic book story. So far as I can see, they've changed some of the characters. They've made Mark's high school girlfriend, Amber, who was this blonde bombshell. They've made her an African-American lady. And I think that changes for the better. Amber being a black lady, is she's even sexier. She's better. She's got more, you know, of that sass. She's got, issues at school, not racial issues, but, you know, she's harassed by people. So, Mark sort of tries to step up for her. He doesn't need to because she's her own woman. You didn't see that with the old Amber in the comics. So my point is, Billy, you know, the changes they have made so far are for the better. And I like that. It's not, putting black roles in places that were originally white and them, you know, stealing that character. No, it's nothing like that. It's definitely for the better. And, you know, you've got great animation. That's the one thing I was a little bit worried about. But it's high-level, fantastic animation on the part of what Amazon Prime delivered. Cool. And it's a great story too. I mean, you really get involved with the characters' lives, which is something you're worried about in animation sometimes, right, Billy? But here they do it well. Great facial expressions, great, you know, dialogue between characters, great plot lines involving side characters, because Invincible is a comic book fueled by a lot of great supporting characters. You know, you've got his superpowered dad, Nolan. You've got his backstory, his origin story, why he's on Earth. You've got the twist, which I'm not going to spoil for you. You've got the various super teams in this world, which are sort of, facsimiles of the famous superhero teams we've come to know. You know, like the main superhero team, the Global Guardians. They're sort of, obviously based off of the Justice League, you know. But yeah, you'll see. They've put a nice spin on every one of the characters. And then you've got, you know, the Teen Team, which is sort of like the Teen Titans, you know, but they're not. There's lots of things you never see happen in the Teen Titans, if you get what I mean. You'll see it happen in a show like The Boys, maybe, you know, but you won't see that in the Teen Titans. And then, Billy, you've got this amazing universe that's being built. And in the comic books, Kirkman did this in a very short time. He established this whole galaxy out there. It's not just on Earth-based level. It's like, immediately within, I think, 10 or 20 issues of the comic book series, he established this amazing scope, kind of like Marvel did with the Kree, the Skrulls, you know, the Shi'ar. He did that too. You know, he's got this whole expanded universe. He's even got other dimensions. He's got that aspect to it, which Doctor Strange brought to the Marvel universe, the multiverse, you know. So a wonderful series, and you should watch that, Billy. Don't worry about the comic. Just watch this show. And then we can talk about it next time during Shop Talk. But I don't know, Billy, unless you've got anything else. I've got nothing else for Shop Talk. I'll talk about some comics during our Recommendations of Ragador segment, which is up next. And that sort of ties in with Shop Talk a little bit. So we're going to play a short promo here, listeners. And then we'll listen to what Dormammu's got for us. So again, stay tuned. Don't go away.
There's something like 115,000 English language podcasts in the world, and no doubt hundreds of them are aimed at the comic book genre.
There are sci-fi comic podcasts.
Horror comic podcasts.
War comic podcasts!
But do you know what we need?
You guys crazy enough to combine those fields and make a podcast of their very own?
Yes. It's the answer to a question no one asked, so that's why we are answering it. Such a gaping hole in the podcast landscape must be filled post-haste.
Did you really just use the word post-haste?
The Weird Warriors podcast covers the Weird War Tales comic book series published by DC Comics from 1971 to 1983. Along the way, we'll also check out other horror and war comics published by DC, Marvel, Charlton, and any other targets that may present themselves to us.
I have the war books, and he has the horror books. So if you're ready to take a nice, relaxing look at the hell of war in comic book form from the age of the caveman to the distant future, then report for duty by subscribing to the Weird Warrior Podcast, brought to you by the Brothers Fleen, wherever fine podcasting provisions are issued.
Vampires!
Aliens!
Dinosaurs!
Alien dinosaurs!
There's something for everyone.
General Sherman said war is hell, but do you know what else is?
Weird.
For our purposes, yes. So tune in to the Weird Warrior Podcast today. Do it! That's an order!
Yes, sir!
Don't call me sir, I work for a living.
But we're not getting paid for this.
Dang!
Well, I'm Max.
And I'm Rich.
And we're going to be bringing you the Weird Warriors Podcast, where we will promise to make war
no more.
Greetings once again from the Dark Dimension. It's Dormammu here, and I haven't been this excited in millennia. As you no doubt heard from the recent promo Billy and Herman played, one of my favorite properties is coming to the realm of podcasting. That's right, me, the Dread Dormammu, is a DC Comics fan, specifically of my favorite title, Weird War Tales, where my compatriot Death does an excellent job of hosting that most esteemed title. So I hope you all tune in for that show, because if you don't, and when my ascension is at hand, each of you will be tortured in the hell where people are skinned alive, which does not exist in the Dark Dimension, but only in one of my favorite films. That's right, not only does Dormammu read DC Comics, he also watches movies. Who knew? Anyway, until we meet again, mortal slime.
Alright, we're back with the recommendations of Ragador. So, Billy, I'm curious to find out what you've got on the slate this week. Lay it on us.
Okay, so this is specifically for any of our listeners that have young kids, grandkids even maybe, nieces, nephews, anybody that's, I would say, probably 10 and under range that's looking for something just, you know, fun, cool, humorous. It's called Saltwater Taffy.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool, the Seaside Adventures of Jack and Benny. And there were 5 volumes of these small little trades, but they're written and illustrated by, and I'm going to say, pronounce his name, Matthew Lou, but it's L-O-U-X is how it's spelled. But yeah, I'm not sure about that one. So Matthew, if you're listening, sorry about that, if that's not how you pronounce it. He's from the States, so you know, I'm not sure how he would pronounce that. But yeah, really, really cool books. I mean, they're just like these crazy, wacky adventures. Like this, I'll read the phrase on the back of the book here to try to get you to, you know, the teaser to try to get you to buy it. It says, 11-year-old Jack Putnam and his 8-year-old brother Benny are being dragged against their will on a summer-long vacation with their family, and not to somewhere cool like Disney World, but to a little port town in Maine named Chowder Bay, far away from any place fun. But what promises to be a very bleak summer quickly becomes a series of exciting adventures in one of the most mysterious places on Earth. Warring seagulls, giant lobsters, kleptomaniac eagles, ghosts from the Civil War, Chowder Bay has far more adventures and mysteries in store than these two boys could have ever imagined. So yeah, it's hilarious. It's just absolute hilarity and funny stuff. But yeah, I used to read them to my kids, and then of course when they got a little bit older and were able to read, they would read them themselves and they would laugh. They loved them. So definitely check those out. I did check Amazon and they're still available on Amazon. They came out, I think the first volume says 2008. Yeah, 2008. So that's quite a while ago, but I'm pretty sure they were still new, or at least volume one was. But if not, there were sellers on there selling them used. And I mean, I think one seller even had one of the volumes for $3. And believe me, you can't go wrong even used for $3. If you have, like I said, young kids or whatever, definitely grab them. They're hilarious.
Dude, I'm going to get this for Talia because, you know, she's eight. She's at that age where she's reading on her own. She's reading lots of kids' comics, you know, like I mentioned in the past. And this would be amazing for her. This is ideal. I'm checking it out on Amazon right now. You sent me the image earlier, and now I've got it here on Amazon. I'm going to order them. And then, yeah, she's going to love this. This is the kind of stuff she riffs on. So I got to thank you for this recommendation because I think this is the first time you've recommended something that she would love and that I would love to read to her or read along with her, you know? Yeah. So
you like it. It's funny. It's good. Just good fun. You know what I mean? Something fun, you know, good.
Oh man.
Comedic thing to read. Yeah. Very fun.
No, thanks dude. Thanks.
So what do you got, man?
Okay. Well, I don't have anything specific other than my coal orders that I picked up from the store here in New Taipei City last week. I went to the store again, which is like, rare for me. I normally go once a month, but this is I've gone twice this month already. I don't know. I was just in the vicinity, you know, so I stopped over there and I picked up a couple of things. Most of the things were recommended to me by the store owner. So the first one that I really like that I picked up, Billy, is a new Marvel comic, you know, with the Eternals buzz going around. They've put out a new Eternals series by Kieran Gillen and Esad Ribic on art. You know, Esad did a couple of Thor with Jason Aaron. He's a great artist. And his Eternals look pretty, damn pretty. And Kieran Gillen's a great writer. He's writing a pretty good Eternals arc here. Now, it's still early days. Issue 2, I just read it last night, and it's good. It's got Icarus from the Eternals facing off against Thanos, with that little sprite kid who can cast illusions along for the ride. It's a pretty good battle. I mean, if you think about how Ribic used to draw Thor fighting the God Butcher, you remember those that storyline? This is on that level. It's Icarus with his eye blasts versus Thanos and his eye blasts, and it's just a great smackdown battle, and also a bit of a storyline connected to it. So I'd recommend that based on the art alone, but you know, like I said, the plot's not bad either. So those two. And then, Billy, I also picked up a DC comic. Now, there's nothing wrong with us recommending DC on the show. I mean, we recommended comics from other publishers. We're a Marvel show, definitely, but we're for our recommendations. We recommend anything, right? Novels, movies, Image comics, Dark Horse. We've done all of that in the past. So DC. And what I picked up specifically was, just because I love this team, and Billy, you might love them too. Let me just throw their name out there. The Crime Syndicate of America. One of the better evil Justice League versions. Now, I've always loved evil amalgamations, evil versions and evil facsimiles of famous superhero teams. You know, I love Squadron Sinister. They fought Avengers, obviously, and then the Defenders in subsequent years. Then they briefly became good. Their alternate version, the Squadron Supreme, showed up, and they're the good guys. But they were also actually bad if you read Mark Gruenwald's 12-issue miniseries, right, Billy? I mean, even though they tried to be good, they'll always be labeled as an evil Justice League, just of how everything deteriorated in that series. But, you know, the Crime Syndicate, and, you know, you and I are going to be discussing them on a future World on Fire episode that we're doing over on our other show, which is our All-Star Squadron podcast. We're going to be talking about them in the near future as well. The Crime Syndicate of America, evil version of the Justice League. You've got Ultraman, you've got Owlman, Superwoman, you've got Johnny Quick, and then a recent new addition is Atomica, this little, you know, atom-like, she's the atom, but a female version of him. Evil female version. And then you've got, of course, Power Ring, who is an evil version of Green Lantern. But in this new iteration, he's an African-American guy very sinister, very mean looking. And this is sort of their origin, right, Billy? So we're not sure if this is the traditional crime syndicate of America, but this is a great issue. You know, it's a 6-issue limited series. And basically, it chronicles the beginning of everything. When, you know, kind of like in the 60s, when the Justice League came together facing the threat of Starro. You remember that, Billy?
Oh, yeah.
This is the crime syndicate of America facing Starro. Actually, that's what brought them together. But before this event happens, this alien invasion, which they're not having because they want to rule the Earth, right? They don't want some alien to come in and, you know, come onto their turf and start throwing his weight around, his sizable weight. This is them banding together to face threats and them deciding to consolidate their power over the Earth because they managed to, well, it's still up in the air. We don't know really what happens at the end of the first issue, but it sort of has a mini origin story for each of them. Not really origin, but it shows how they came to prominence in the world. You've got young Ultraman assassinating John F. Kennedy in 1963.
Oh, wow.
That's this flying kid just lasering him. It's horrible. And, you know, all of this kind of stuff happening in the comic book. And you've got Johnny Quick, who's this drug-addicted, you know, hyperspeed junkie, and Atomica has a bit of a relationship with him. You've got the great dynamic between those two. Superwoman's this nymphomaniac, but also this into S&M. You know, just the way she looks. She kind of reminds me of, you know, Uber. What's her name, that Captain America, that Invaders villain? Kriegerfrau. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Uber woman.
Yeah. Dark-haired lady.
Yes, with the whip. The Nazi lady into S&M. Oh, man. Anyway, she reminds me of her. It's just a great issue. I would say pick it up. Now, I'm caught at a loss here because I'm trying to find it here in my pile. Sorry for that, listeners. Normally, this doesn't happen. You know, I have it at hand, but I forgot. But the main one I wanted to recommend was The Eternals, but this one's damn good, too. Okay, while I'm looking through the pile for the comic here, let me tell you what else I got. Noctera, which is an Image comic series by Scott Snyder and Tony Daniel on art. That's a pretty good one. Billy, I want to recommend that one too. I'll give you the specs on Crime Syndicate just now as soon as I find the issue here. Okay, so Noctera, Scott Snyder writing, Tony Daniel, Batman artist that I really loved with Grant Morrison of recent years. He's a pretty good artist. They're doing this horror series. It's like The Stand, you know, Stephen King's The Stand, another post-apocalyptic tale. But this one is very unique, Billy. It's like the world, you know, the 10 plagues, right, from the Bible. One of the plagues, I think it was the 9th plague, I'm not sure, was darkness, right? Absolute darkness. So this is what happens. This is the apocalypse. They call it the PM, you know, the moment that this darkness hit the earth. It's called 0 p.m.
Okay.
And what happens is this darkness struck and the sun disappears, the stars disappear, everything is completely dark. And of course, lights still work, electric lights, you know, neon, phosphorescent, like that works. But that's not the only thing that causes trouble in this world. It seems that the darkness is a living organism that the longer you stay in this darkness, right, Billy? The longer you stay away from light, the more this darkness sort of infects you on a genetic level and you start mutating into these darkness monsters. And at first it happens with the animals because after all, animals don't have artificial light to protect them from this encroaching virus-like darkness. You know, so the animals start mutating. They turn into these monsters. And then they start mating with each other, creating further mutated monsters. But the humans were the last to go because, you know, they have lights to protect them. So they were slow to be infected. But many humans were, in fact, infected. And they became the most dangerous dark monsters or dark creatures. So we don't see them in this first issue of Noctera, but it's about this girl who ferries people. She's like Charon, the ferryman, you know, from Greek mythology. She ferries people from one compromised haven to another, you know, with this truck that she has, you know, this truck that she's she used to be a courier off, and she's outfitted this truck with lights of all kinds, you know, like Christmas lights, neon lights, strobe lights. Every person in this world wears their own light suit, if you know what I mean, Billy. It could be a suit lined with bulbs, or it could be, you know, you just like got these neon strips all over your suit, and you use light as a weapon. They've weaponized light. They shoot bullets that emit a phosphor charge or something, you know, like an explosion of strobe lights and stuff like that that they employ against this darkness. Sure. And this is her getting paid a fat fee to take these two people, this old man and his granddaughter or something. She has to ferry them to this a place that nobody's ever heard of, which is very dangerous, but they offer her a lot. And she's also trying to get her little brother out of the haven where they're in at the moment, because he's been infected by the darkness, you know. So it starts from your gums, you know. Once your gums start to blacken, that's where you know that the darkness has seeped into your body somehow. And it's just because you're not, you know, in lighted areas long enough, you know. So she wants to get her brother out of there because he's about to be culled or executed. She takes these folks on this joyride across the states, and it's full of these dark monsters, you know, and mm-hmm. she has to deal with them. But she's a badass character. I think her name's Val, and she's got a backstory to an orphan. It's just a great comic. I'd say pick it up. There's only one issue out at the moment, Nocterra from Image Comics. Yeah, great comic. So those are a bit of me for having a foray into the new issues. I don't normally do that, Billy, but I did that this week and picked up two Eternals, one Crime Syndicate, and this Nocterra. Yeah, to supplement my growing back issue obsession.
Yeah, when did they put that Eternals movie off until? I know they kind of pushed everything forward, but when they initially announced that, I was real excited about it. But then when they showed some of the concept art and costumes and things like that, I was kind of like, I don't know about this. So I'm not sure I'm going to go see that one, but I know they're making a big deal out of it.
Well,
it was going to be a very,
I was hoping that they would make it more Kirby-esque, you know, Billy, more like a Kirby homage. I think the release date now officially is in November of 2021. I'm not sure of that, but yeah, it's still this year. So, it's been pushed back to November. But, you know, I was hoping they would make it more Kirby-esque, like the comic book. But so far, what I've seen, there's some little bit of Kirby in there, but not a lot. You know, it's not... Okay, Taika Waititi did a lot of Kirby in Thor Ragnarok, but was it the right kind of Kirby? It was just... It wasn't really the right kind of Kirby, you know what I mean? It was just okay, here we got some Kirby things to show. We also love Jack Kirby. It's not... I want the whole movie to be Kirby. Sure. Can they make that happen?
Like the miniseries, or I shouldn't say miniseries, just like the series, you know, that he did. That was just that, and then when they brought them into the Thor book, what was that, a year or two later maybe? That was just so crazy.
Yeah, that I was loved it. Thor the Eternal Saga. Oh, that's mm-hmm. one of my favorite Thor stories ever. Facing off against the Celestials.
We will talk one
we
day on a
have
show.
To. Aaron, that's suitably wacky for Into the Weird as well, right, Billy? That reaches our level of weirdness.
Maybe that can be a bonus episode for something else.
Yeah, which we're still going to tease. I think maybe the next show that's going out, we'll drop a teaser for what's coming. But for now, Billy, I think that's it. We don't have a lot of feedback this week for the Allies of Agamotto, so we're going to head off into our send-off. But I had a blast talking Doctor Strange as ever with you, Billy. We're getting to the sad part of us having to say farewell to one of our favorite creative teams. But, you know, there's still a lot of Doctor Strange goodness on the horizon. So good times, especially in 2021 for what we've got planned, featuring the Doc and other assorted Marvel Bronze Age characters.
Get ready.
So, Billy, tell the listeners, where can they track you down and stalk you online? If they're of that mind.
Yeah, so as always, just Twitter. Look me up on Twitter, @BillyD_Licious. And then I have, always my nose in everything crazy on Twitter with comic books and movies and all sorts of shenanigans. And then, like, you know, you mentioned earlier, too, look for our other show, you know, All-Star Squadron podcast. That's at All Squadron, too. You can look that one up, too, because then, you know, we always post the show and everything else in there and kind of talk about some of that stuff. I'm not quite as active on that one, but I'm going to try to be better. So that's where you can look for me.
Yeah, and if I can promote something here, Billy, I finally managed to, because you and I did a joint recording recently for Magazines and Monsters, for your blog and podcast there, and we normally talk horror movies on the podcast, and I finally managed to, because it was my turn to edit, I finally managed to finish editing our Salem's Lot episode. So by the time listeners listen to this Into the Weird episode, Salem's Lot on Magazines and Monsters, the podcast, will be out, and that's where you and I discuss the TV film from the 70s, but we also discuss a little bit of the Stephen King novel. So I know a lot of our friends on Twitter thinking about you there, Ryan Daly from the Fire and Water Network. That's his favorite Stephen King novel, and it's mine as well. So, you know, we talked about that on Tomb of Dracula on a Halloween episode a while back on Long Box of Darkness. This is a really good, I think you and I did a really good recording there. It's a 2 hour plus recording, but, you know, we covered both, you know, segments of the TV movie. It's a damn long movie, and it's a great movie. One of the greatest horror films, I think, that should never have been a TV movie. It should have been a legit, you know, cinema experience that should stand with classics like The Exorcist and The Omen, I think, but, you know, maybe even Jaws. But still, you know, it's a good show, and I'm hoping you listeners can check that out on Magazines and Monsters. Just search for that on any podcatcher that you're listening to this show at. You'll find our Magazines and Monsters Salem's Lot. I'll drop a link as well, Billy. And then, for me, you can just look at, me up on Twitter as well, at Dark Longbox. We're also at Into Weird on Twitter. And send feedback, please. We would appreciate that, to sinkintotheweird@gmail.com. Also, check out our blog, www.sinkintotheweird.com, for a podcast addendum show featuring images from these two Doctor Strange comics we discussed. And yeah, that's basically it, Billy. We've got a couple of other recordings on the horizon. You and I, we're going to be busy, but that's going to be fine because we've got a holiday coming up. Sort of.
Oh, yeah. We got fun planned, you know, a lot of recordings and a lot of fun stuff planned here for the very near future. So, like you said, by the time people hear this recording, it's going to be full on. So, get ready.
Definitely. And we'll leave the listeners with a bit of a message. Stay cool, stay weird, stay strange, stay odd. All the synonyms for weird is cool. And if you're one of them, remember you're special, and we want to thank you for listening to us and for reading comics. And even if you're just living vicariously through us by listening to the comics we discussed, we also appreciate that. So thanks for being here, listeners, and thanks for being weird and enjoying our particular brand of bizarreness on Into the Weird. So we'll be back, right, Billy? That's bye from me.
All right, stay weird, everybody.
Cheerio.